Gene Harris and Scott Hamilton Quintet with Blues for Gene. It's from their album, the 1990 album, At Last. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. And let's give you a general idea of what Free Your Mind Friday is about. We suspend our normal format and just open up the program and make it a free form forum, if you want, so that people can express their minds about whatever it is they think is important and they have a strong opinion about. It is not just, you know, yapping. We try to also use it as a way of perfecting your ability to communicate and make your point. Because who knows? You may be one day calling into a program and you would want to express your opinion, and we would love to know that the discipline of participating in Free Your Mind Friday would show, you know, as a great addition to whatever show you call into, because you know how to organize your thoughts, you know how to prove your point, and you know how to basically streamline your presentation so that you get everything you want to get across in a timely fashion and your presentation is tight. So this is what Free Your Mind Friday is all about. It is not just, as I said, it's not just yapping. It's also about strengthening your ability to make your point as concisely as possible, but as powerfully as possible, so that you make great use of the time on air that you're sharing with those listening. The number to call is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and that gets us started with Jay from New York.
Yes, good afternoon, Nutrice, and to the listening audience.
Thank you.
All is doing well and that you've had your lentil this week. Number one, you know, now that it seems like the Democratic Party and its sycophant members, a.k.a. black women, are solely and wholeheartedly behind Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
What gives you that impression?
Oh, you got to let me finish first before you could answer that question. Now it seems, like I said, they are behind them. They're going to go to work to get him into office and all of that. My question is this. What does one get in return for placing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in office with the unique circumstances that are facing this country that has more to do economically than it does, in a sense, with the pandemic? Because I believe that the pandemic will be under control at some point, but the recovery economically in this country will be definitely, definitely much harder to do. Now, if we look at the last time the Democrats was in a position to repair the economy in this country, a.k.a. Obama, everyday poor people like me and yourself, we didn't really get anything in return. He didn't help black home ownership in regards to the mortgage crises that we face. He bailed out the banks. And he basically moved forward and decimating the supposed so-called wealth of Black Americans. Now, in return, we're here, aka Black women, to save the world from the new boogeyman, Donald Trump. And in the process, like I said, I just want to know, what are we going to get in return? And when I say, what are we going to get in return, I'm talking about Black people and basically displace poor white people and other minorities, if the truth be told, even though my concern, to be honest, is strictly with Black people. Because I'm basically not seeing anything that's going to make it a return for the manner in which most people are behaving, like this Joe Biden, Kamala Harris ticket is the resurrection of Jesus Christ, a.k.a. maybe Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
Well, I don't even know how to react to that because there's a lot of stuff in there. So I'm not... Basically, you're saying it doesn't appear yet what the quid pro quo for African Americans will be in supporting a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris ticket. Well, I have this to say. I mean, when was it that people had a quid pro quo? I mean, a definite quid pro quo. It was always based on the hope that those that they're voting for will do the right thing, but it has not, to my impression, it has not been ever a situation where they say, you vote for me, I'll give you this. That has not been the arrangement.
And it's always
political
been
arrangement.
The pretense.
I'm sorry?
No, you treat. It's always been the pretense in the Black community is that if we support the Democratic Party, we would get something in return. Now, you and I both know we ain't never got nothing in return, but that doesn't mean when the narrative is put forward that, you know, one says the Democratic Party will do more for you than the Republican Party will. Now, me personally...
Wait a minute.
Let me finish this one point, please. Since Donald Trump's been in office, I have to be honest, I haven't seen where any of his policies have solely hurt Black people that haven't hurt white people also. So I'm not caught up in that game. I'm just dealing in regards to the reality of the assumption that if the Democrats get into office, the life of Black people is going to be better.
Well, this is the thing about politics. It is less about hope and more about the ability to exact a price through political action. You know, we have this fairy tale idea that people will do the right thing all the time. You know, they'll get to understand that they didn't win an election because they're that good, but they won an election because people mobilized and responded on the premise that hopefully they'll recognize it and do something to respond to the many needs of the community. But that, to me, has always been a fantasy. And we haven't yet learned as a community how to play the game of politics to win. Now, what does winning mean? It means that you have a series of desires and wants and needs. You articulate them and you're compelled to push for them. But that hasn't happened. Why? Because the community is not organized. We have a scattershot approach, and they respond accordingly. If people were organized and presented a cogent list of demands, and with the implication that they're willing to back it up with their vote or without their vote, I think we will have an entirely different reaction from the power bases in this country, but we don't. We do not galvanize our wants and needs. We do not back it up with resolution to say, we need these things. We're not begging, we're not asking, we're stating, this is what is needed. Now, we're willing and we're determined that we will not be ignored. When the community flexes its muscles and indicates that it is serious, then you'll see an entirely different reaction. But frankly, the community doesn't respond that way. It just leaves it up to the people to do whatever they want to do. And then comes the belly aching afterwards when the election is over and they didn't get what they were looking for. So it is not about, when there are other people, I want to get to them too. The thing is that we cannot constantly follow the same pattern and expect a different result. We are not organized, plain and simple. We're not organized. We talk a good game and we don't back it up. We don't back it up. You can get people involved in things that have to do with protests and whatnot, but by now, my goodness, we ought to have grown up enough to understand how politics works. It isn't about just being out in the street. It's about having a strategy. It's about organizing so that you can predictably determine how a community feels and what the community is determined to do. But we're not doing that. We have a scattershot approach. We are very undisciplined in the way we exercise political power. And until we realize that we've got to take a different route, you're either serious or you're not, or go home. If you are not serious about following through and realizing the power of your power, you'll get what you're getting. They have no fear of the Black community because the Black community has not indicated that there's a price to pay for being ignored. And as long as we take that lackadaisical attitude and we repeat it every political season, people talk, they yammer, they have all kinds of ways of analyzing things. Great. What are you doing in terms of consolidating your power and having an approach that says, not only do we want this, but we expect you to do this. If you don't want to do it, or not capable of doing it, we resort to plan B. But we are not disciplined, and we can't avoid that. This is true. We're playing with our own political power. We denigrate it, we disregard it, we only talk about it. It is annoying as hell to me, you know, where you have all this potential power, and all people are doing is talking. They're not doing. So nobody has any fear of the Black community because they're not going to inflict the consequent punishment for being ignored. They know this. So we have to stop these bad habits and get serious. If we can't understand the enormity of the suffering, if we don't translate it into action, directed action, we will be stuck in this space for a long time. Thanks for calling in and getting us started today. Joe from Florida, you on the air.
Yeah, I'll be very brief. I had a great thing happen this week to me. I discovered Hazel Scott.
Ah, good for you.
Unbelievable. And I, here's the important thing. I emailed the all my friends, a whole list of people, and with a video of her. And many people came back, said they never heard of her, and they were delighted. They couldn't believe it. Not only because she was a great jazz musician, but because of her political activity. And all your listeners should do their homework. And if they don't know who she is, I'm not surprised that you know who she is, because you're into jazz.
Yeah.
And someday you might want to start off your program with something by her. I think she sang, but I'm not interested in vocals. But she was
well,
a fantastic.
Yeah, she sang as well.
Yeah.
Very political. She was, in fact, the wife of Adam Clayton Powell Jr.
That's right.
And was very, very dedicated to her community, very much so, but was a fine artist and a great pianist as well.
Incredible. Adam Clayton Powell was one of my heroes in the 60s because he literally gave the thumb or whatever you want to say to all the other phony politicians in Washington.
Audacious power. He used to say what you just described was what he described as having audacious power.
Wow. He was the one, keep the faith, baby, and they had a warrant out for his arrest, and he lived in, he stayed in Bimini for a while, and I just loved it. I loved it. All right, that's it.
But I'm glad you discovered Shirley Scott.
Fantastic.
Great. Thank you.
Take care, ma'am.
Duke from New Jersey, you're on the air. The number is 888-874-4888.
Hey, Utrice.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I love the interview with Professor Horn this week. That took
Thank
me
you.
Back to old times, listening to you on BAI. And you introduced me to so many people. I mean, the list would be so long. At the moment, I got Professor Horace Campbell on my mind from Syracuse.
Never hear
his voice anymore. Is he still on the scene?
I don't know, but I believe so. I'm not absolutely sure about that.
Yeah, I remember him. Anyway, that's not why I was calling. I got a bone to pick with you, and I hope you explain this to me on Tuesday, I think it was.
Yes.
You went into a rant on Bernie about taxing the wealthy. And after I listened to the program, I first went online to try to see if I could find a clip of him, if there was a press clip of him discussing this or something, and I couldn't find any kind of clip. The only thing I found was him a Twitter thing where he was talking about taxing the obscene wealth that the wealthy has made during this pandemic. Okay, so now when I tuned into you, I missed the very beginning part of the show, so I didn't know what you were referencing. All I heard you was going in on, what is he talking about, taxing the wealthy and blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, what is Utrice saying? I don't get what she doesn't agree with here. I mean, the tax rate on the wealthy during FDR was like 90-something percent.
Yeah, I get it. I get it that it might have shaken you up. But the point is this. We should be done with dramatics.
Hold on, Utrice. Hold on. Uh-huh. Let me just say this one point. He was not talking about just taxing the wealthy. He was talking about the ultra wealthy, like the 1% of the 1%. And this has nothing to do with my political views. It's just for me, morally, for one human being to have access to so much wealth, it just seems like we just should not allow that on this planet. And I don't care what they did to get it or to earn it. There's a certain level of wealth that you just shouldn't be able to go beyond when we're living in a planet full of poor and poverty. I don't, please explain this to me.
Okay. All right. It may seem that I took an extreme position, but it really isn't.
Yes, you did.
No matter what your political views, you still have to have a kind of point of reference that places everything in proper perspective. I think, too, I mean, it's some of the wealth in this world is just, it makes you bilious that people have this kind of money and wealth available to them, and the rest of the world, even the world right outside their fence, is starving, and you see the direct contrast, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is. I bring it back to, what is our role in that? We act like we have no role in this, and we've always acted as if we have no role except to object. And at a point, it becomes just silly to just,
yeah, but I don't understand what you mean. What I don't understand what you mean when you say, what is our role? Bernie clearly is saying our role is to make a statement that that's not acceptable and that they have to give part of that back.
Yes, but we also exist in a political environment in which we cannot bully people for what they have, because hints to a different political arrangement that we have been struggling against.
Okay, I think we're just not going to agree on this. But the thing that
you have to appreciate this point, I think. I don't want people to have obscene amounts of wealth, but we have to live with the reality of it. What is the reality of wealth, and how do we construct our social reality so that it doesn't yield this enormous, gap between rich and poor?
There's no way to construct a social reality that will eliminate that kind of wealth. There's no way
to
do that.
We don't know that. We haven't tried it.
No. You trees. Capitalism makes this world go around, and people make money. There's nothing that's going to change that. That's the way it is.
The question I'm asking is it just the same with all of that being true? Is it right for somebody to pop up and say we should demand 60% of what it is these people, and he points them out, have made, the obscene wealth that they have made, we want 60% of it?
Yes, it's absolutely correct. But you're framing it the wrong way.
You can't have it both ways.
Listen to me, please.
You can't do tit for tat, because you have now to discuss your morality.
Okay. Can you just give me a second here, you trees?
Sure.
He's not saying that he wants to take 60% of everything that they've earned in their life and in their career.
No, he's not saying that. But he is saying,
he's saying over a certain point, we should take 60%. And that's the same thing that FDR
gives you that
said
power
during the Great
this
Depression.
This is my question. How could you be so well adjusted to the idea that is okay. Would it be okay if it happened to you?
Some human beings on this planet to have that kind of unnecessary wealth over a certain point.
What is unnecessary wealth? It's necessary for them. They earned it.
I'll tell you what unnecessary wealth is.
Society, this is the problem that we have.
I'll tell you what it is. Just recently, I read an article about the lady who was married to Bezos, the Amazon guy, right?
Yeah, yes.
His ex-wife, whatever she got out of their settlement, she just recently, I'm sorry for the ringing phone in the background, recently made a bunch of contributions. Some of them were to historically black colleges, right?
Yes.
And I think the article was saying that she made the contributions on a Monday, like let's say she donated $5 million. By Friday of the same week, she had made all that money back. And she doesn't even work. That's just money making money. And you're saying to me that that's acceptable in your world?
I'm saying that's acceptable in this world.
I don't know what to say. That's crazy.
You see, I think people should just own up to the fact that they resent it. I do too.
That what?
They resent it. This enormous disparity in wealth. She gave money, obviously, out of the settlement that she got with business, and he's ridiculously wealthy. She, too, was ridiculously wealthy and still is, probably, because of their financial arrangement in the divorce.
And you're saying that's okay, that's just the way it is.
No, but we have to also be honest with ourselves. Much of this is coming from resentment. They didn't break any laws. People have to own up to this stuff. What we are reacting to is a visceral thing, and it's hard to get rid of. We resent the idea that there should be this much wealth. And so we feel entitled, and this is why I criticized Bernie Sanders. As I said, Bernie Sanders has three houses. What would his reaction be if we said, sell two, keep one, but sell two and take that money and put it toward housing initiatives in your community?
Can you hear me, Utrice?
Yes, what are you saying?
Okay, I don't want to take up all of the show with this.
This is a very important point, and this is what
saying.
We have to be realistic.
If you ask Bernie first of all, two out of three is not a third.
People he targeted.
If Bernie has three houses and you said to him, okay, based on your proposal, you have to give up one of your houses, I bet you would be fine with that.
No, why don't you try it?
He doesn't need three homes.
If he's fine with it. There comes a point where we have to be rational.
It was irrational, and still is
irrational to simply say, all right, you made too much money, an obscene amount of money. Give us 60% back. What signal are you sending? Are you a progressive who's also a dictator?
Right.
Are you a progressive who's also a dictator? You have to weigh the thing correctly, it seems to me. Even if you think it was extraordinary that they had this amount of wealth and will continue to make more, it still is within the framework that you generally support. And that is, everybody is entitled to earn the benefits of his or her labor. That's the benefit of their labor.
What labor? The labor. I just told you about Bezos' wife. What labor?
Again, you are resentful because
it's
now you say what labor is that?
It's got nothing to do with resentment. Let's end this because I'm just surprised that someone as progressive as yourself would take that stand on this position. And what it tells me is ultimately we're moving at a snail's pace in terms of changing our human society on this planet because
circles. You want to dictate to the world some set of social conduct that should be enforced, which you think would be in line with your philosophy, your social philosophy. I'm saying we would all like to have straight teeth, but we don't. What we have to appreciate in the circumstance with Bernie Sanders is that his method was wrong. His whole approach was wrong. And he didn't need to come out with a program of let's destroy these people because they're too rich and they got away with too much when he himself was a part of fabricating the arrangement. What happened was they made enormous amounts of money. Number two, out the window went the reality and the fact. And I'm not saying this because I support the rich and blah, blah, blah. No. Let's look at the facts. These people have a long history, as much money as they've made, of also supporting major causes with their money that they had made. And I was disappointed in Sanders' approach, which was to condemn them for making so much money, and he facilitated it, and then decided publicly to upbraid them and to call them out and to saddle them with blame for things that they did not do. It clearly was a case in which nobody thought out completely what this arrangement legally should be
and
who was going to be responsible for what. But it was wrong, and I still insist on it.
Okay.
Bernie Sanders was
wrong. I'm looking right at the tweet, and he's saying if we tax 60% of the windfall gains 400 billionaires made from March to August of 2010, we could raise over $420 million.
Yes, but
that's
don't
exactly
do that
his
post
words
facto.
And his tweet.
This
now,
is
how
my
could
point.
You possibly be against that?
You can't do that post facto.
Okay,
if
so
you
that's
know,
in this.
That's a reasonable approach. You incorporate it in a legal arrangement, a binding legal arrangement before things get off the ground.
No, that's crazy.
Huh?
No. Utrecht, let's just end this because we're never going to meet in the middle.
And all parties agree to that before, because this is how business is done.
He's
business
been trying
isn't
to push something.
To how
I mean,
you
Utrecht, there's been people all over the planet talking about a wealth tax forever. So it's not like he just pulled this out of a hat. People
it's
have been talking about this forever, so people have
tax.
Been trying to set up
it's
the political structure
here.
To legally do this.
So
the way you're making
what
it sound like
supposed
it's...
to do in a timely fashion, and now that the results demonstrate ridiculous amounts of wealth, they didn't hide it. It was poor planning.
You're right. I can't win with you. You're not going to give in on your position. So
it's not about my position. I want this understood. Simply because we are, quote, progressives doesn't mean we have to act like bullies. You can't show up after a deal has been consummated.
I'm not bullying anybody.
And they understand the terms and conditions. And then you say, give us 60%. you go to hell. That's not the way business is done.
Listen,
and Bernie Sanders, of all people, knows that. You know, and this is why I said, you have three houses. How would he feel if people said, you have too many houses?
If you propose that to him, I bet you he would definitely donate a third house. That's a ridiculous point to make.
He would be a fool to do it.
He's saying very specifically in the tweet, he's only talking about the money, the wealth that they made during this pandemic. That's all. He's not even taking it any further than that. He's talking about we're in a wartime mode.
For what, if in the event that this happened, they did not consummate this contract properly. They didn't set it up properly. And so it looked like he came after the fact that a lot of money was made, and he came with a mind of just full of resentment because he didn't see this coming. And then found out they did not take care of business. This was not done in some kind of a dark room somewhere. These are people who are business people, and they were operating with an understanding. Yes, they have an obligation. But if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you can't hold people responsible for the fact that there's a loophole there. What do you want him to do?
Don't you think he spent his whole career trying to do what he should have done? I mean, he's put the effort forth. One man can't just arbitrarily say,
I'm sorry, but there is a way you do business. There's no explanation. You either do it the right way or you don't do it the right way. There's no middle ground. What Bernie is pretty much saying without saying it, he did not expect, and perhaps even the businessman did not expect, that they would make so much money. But they did not go into this with the intention, it seems to me, of robbing anybody or taking more than they were supposed to. Not at all. This was a straight up deal. And they lived the deal to its intention. Now, if Bernie, this is why I blame Bernie. If you have a problem with this, first of all, we shouldn't know until after you've attempted talks and they went south. He gave them no time, no warning. He just comes out as the guy with a cudgel, and he's going to beat them over the head for something that they did not do.
Nutrice, it was a tweet. You're making it sound like he was on the floor of the Senate saying it was a tweet.
It was a tweet or a whisper campaign. The fact is that he attacked them, and it was a false premise. And he knew that. But
he hasn't backtracked on what he said, not one bit. So, okay, look.
We have to resolve this. I want you to understand.
Let's not go on because I will never understand what you're saying.
We have to see that Bernie messed up big time here. Bernie did.
I don't agree. So then let's just stop it. I don't agree. I don't agree with your position on this, and I don't think he messed up. And I love you still, no matter what you say. You ain't nothing going to change that. But on this particular point, it's just sad. Because if someone as progressive as you can take that position because a man put a tweet out, we're in a bad situation.
It becomes public condemnation. That's what you're not understanding.
I am understanding that, but I'm saying that's a moot point to me. I don't care about that.
And you assassinate people's character. You make it appear that they basically pulled one over on you. None of that. That is
you're taking this way. You're taking this
progressive
way
person.
Too far. You're taking this that way.
Because this is
in the wrong direction.
This is damaging.
The bottom line for me.
Purposefully damaging somebody's reputation. And Bernie's reputation is no more important than anybody else.
He hasn't named one name. I'm looking right at the tweet. He named nobody. So whose reputation is he ruining?
Everybody in that community knows who he's talking about.
Oh, come on. Okay, listen, Utrice, here's my bottom line on this, okay? I'm all for building wealth, okay? I've been an entrepreneur myself in the past. I don't have nothing with people making money, okay? What I'm saying is when you reach a point that the money is generating your wealth, not what you physically created or what good you put into the planet, right? When it's just the digits in a computer that are generating you more wealth. This is almost like artificial wealth, almost. It's fake money.
Well, you could say that.
Absolute. Let me finish, please. And then I'm just going to hang up. It's absolutely a moral
I wouldn't be able to respond to
take some of that. He's not saying give it all to me.
No. He's saying I want to take 60%. And it came out
of nowhere. 60, I'm taking half of it. I'm taking half of it. Period. That's it. You're still the wealthiest group on the planet.
You
will be forever.
Entirely,
your descendants will continue to be the wealthiest group on the planet.
I want 60, but you'll still have this. The fact is, this is not the way you do business at all. My father was a businessman. This is not the way you do business. Businesses are conducted through contracts
that
are legally enforceable in a court of law. You don't come post facto and say, oh, since you made so much money, I know before we expected we'll divvy up some kind of money, but I want 60.
What new
medication would you be on to say something like
Utrice,
that?
It's 1:45. You got to take some more callers. I appreciate you, and I love you. You have a good weekend. I'll talk with you soon, all right?
Thank you, and you too. I was hoping people wouldn't miss my point. Being progressive, being even radical, has nothing to do with it. This is how business is done. You put things in order so everybody's on the same page from the beginning. From the beginning, everybody's on the same page. And it is not unprogressive to say, well, I don't agree with where you're going now. This is not the impression we had because we all were in agreement with the concept of it. But Sanders is wrong. I still maintain that because, first of all, he went public and it gave him a lot of political ammunition. But it was mean-spirited and not at all in the spirit of what a progressive is supposed to do. You come to terms quietly and you resolve it. I don't think that they were beyond reach, that they would not be inclined to sit down and figure out post facto what's the best way to resolve it. Went to the media and made a big hullabaloo about it. And then put them in a bad light. That too is not proper behavior. So yes, I still maintain that Bernie Sanders was wrong to behave in that fashion, and disappointingly so, because he's an older guy, he's been in this business for a long time, and he ought to understand. Maybe he did understand and didn't care, but he ought to understand how businesses can be destroyed by people attacking reputation and interfering with the goodwill they already enjoyed. You never know, because we haven't gotten an account of what the future might be for these businessmen as they continue to grow their businesses and are looking for financial help or deals or whatever it is, how this could affect their future business. I think it was animus. I think it was resentment at some level that these younger guys coming up were just incredible in the way they handled their money. And they haven't always been successful. They've been on the brink of basically going out of business many times. But you have to behave differently. You're an elder statesman. You conduct yourself differently, especially because you consider yourself a progressive. We shouldn't have known this at all. Obviously, you lost the power of influence, or you didn't care to do this quietly and fix it. Bad, bad for Bernie. Bad move. All right, Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Eutrice, and greetings to your audience.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm still learning, thank you. Learning and maintaining. Yes,
good for
ma'am.
You.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to free my mind about a few things right quick, try to be concise here. But just for the record, I remember once seeing a video of Hazel Scott playing.
What happened to Leona?
Huh?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Leona, we weren't hearing you there for a minute. You checked out on us there for a minute.
Oh, I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to run through this right quick to free my mind. Listen, first of all, I was saying that I saw a video once of Hazel Scott playing two piano keyboards at the same time. Just she had
yes.
one hand. Oh, she was, it was, oh, amazing, amazing. Like you said, a great artist she was, among other things. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on right quick was, these are just some questions I kind of have in a way. There seems that there may be a wave of evictions coming up, people being evicted from their homes, maybe on the horizon real soon, because some of these moratoriums have stopped, and those folks that were getting unemployment insurance, the extra, that has stopped too, I'm told. And that's something I'm kind of concerned about, I have questions about. That's one thing. The other thing is Kamala Harris, her selection as VP candidate with Joe Biden. I'm finding that her husband seems to be pretty interesting to me. He's a white Jewish lawyer. They got married in 2014, and he seems to be popular with some people in Israel. I saw an article not too long ago. Well, it was July 2019. It was an article called "Kamala Harris' Husband Doug Imhoff is Our Hot
yes,
Jewish Dad
Imhoff.
Crush." Imhoff, yeah, our hot Jewish dad crush. Some folks, some people in Israel, you know, think he's a hot dad for whatever that's worth. And I also noticed that I don't know if the United States of America has ever had a quote-unquote Jewish president yet, but should Joe Biden not be able to, should he get elected, should he not be able to fulfill his duties, and Kamala Harris has to step up and she has her Jewish husband with her, I'm just curious if that would be maybe a de facto Jewish president. For whatever that's worth, just thoughts, random thoughts.
Well, why do you say that? Why do you say that?
Why do I say what?
That by default we would have a Jewish president.
Well, because he's when they got married, she started making donations to charities. That's according to, again, to this article. They checked their tax returns, and prior to her marrying this guy, she wasn't making many donations to charity or what have you. But he stepped when after he got married, those numbers went up. So he's a mover and a shaker, I would think, for whatever.
But why automatically assign such negatives to the fact that this is her husband? This is her private decision to marry this man. Why is that now everybody's business?
Oh, I'm not saying it's negative. Oh, it's everybody's business because she's a politician and she's out.
But the inference is going into that part of the ongoing push by people to associate Jews with a desire to rule the world.
Oh, is that the inference?
Couldn't it just be that they love each other, they've got married, and they're having a great marriage, and all is well? Why the inference, you think, of sinister motives? Because he's Jewish.
Why the inference of sinister motives? Because he's Jewish? I will look at that.
He married a black woman because there's intense interest in disabling the black movement, whatever that is. Let's grow up a bit.
I don't know that that's what I'm saying, but please say that last sentence again, Utrice.
We make these things casually. We make these comments and inferences quite casually, but they're deadly serious. And we should be very careful about insinuating things. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't it just be, well, this is the man she loves. She picked him. He picked her. End of story. Why do we have to be concerned any further about their relationship?
Well, because she's in the public eye. That's why.
So
because she's running supposedly running for public, vice president. That's why. I could care less if she wasn't, you know, supposedly on the ticket. But,
that's
another conversation.
So?
These are just questions that I had, you know, and... I don't know that there's ever been a well.
The questions are in your mind.
Yes, ma'am.
But we can't deny the fact that there's an antecedent. There is a bunch of things surrounding our consciousness.
All right. Well, let me put it to you this way. Look, AIPAC is one of the most powerful lobbying organizations to date, I guess. And I watched a video where Benjamin Netanyahu was in the U.S. Congress, and this was a few years ago. That man got 21 standing ovations in the U.S. Congress. I know that Cynthia McKinney has said multiple times that when she was in office that she had to sign some pledge to Israel before she could really move effectively. In fact, that's why she got primaried out. The influence of the Israel lobby in the United States government is serious, and it's no joke.
We have to come to a different view of it.
I beg your pardon?
AIPAC is moving in its interests.
Yes, ma'am, it
and
is.
If she was dedicated to her interests, she wouldn't sign the document.
She didn't sign the document.
Right, but she would make a big thing about it.
I'm sorry, what?
She would make a big thing about it.
She did. That's why I know about it. She made a big deal about it. She wrote a book about it. She does YouTube videos about it. Twitter about it.
I understand.
Yes, ma'am.
We get emotional. We understand what's going on. This does not in any way detract from the fact that you should understand what's going on at all times, if we can. But at the same time, don't give it more power than it has. Instead, we should invest our power in constructing a usable and useful defense against what is happening. We just can't come out and lash out and say, well, this is what is happening. Okay, that's fine. You did it, fine. Now what? That's my question constantly. Now what? Where is our AIPAC? All right, I heard some hints there. That means our program is ended. We run out of time. But in the meantime, it's the weekend. Have yourself a really good weekend. Surround yourself with people who mean you well and add dimension to your life. And let's persevere until we meet each other again on Monday. Thank you so much, all of you, for your contributions today. Bye-bye.